Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Today we're talking to Jim Laval. He's a nationally recognized educator, clinician, it's a hard word to say, clinician, author, and he's also an industry consultant. His recent book, Your Blood Never Lies, is available at Amazon.com. I recommend it highly. And we're going to talk a little bit about testing for cardiovascular risk, also for immunity in just a moment. But, you know, in part one, we talked a lot about aged garlic extract. So a lot of people are going to say, well, you know, I got the message. Garlic is good. I'm just going to eat a lot of garlic because, we know that garlic is a healthy food to eat. And, I'll go to the store and, you know, there's so many garlic brands out there. So, garlic is good. So I'll just get some kind of garlic capsule. They're all the same, aren't they? Or is there a distinction that makes aged garlic extract have different properties?
Well, I tell you, this is the biggest, the biggest distinction is that you should realize that eating garlic is good. Eating garlic tastes good. I'm Italian. I love garlic. Even eating garlic is associated with improved health across various cultures. But if you're looking for the specific benefits of cardiometabolic health and what we've been talking about, you really need to get aged garlic extract. There's only one brand. Kyolic is the brand, K-Y-O-L-I-C, Kyolic aged garlic. So that's the only one. If it doesn't say Kyolic aged garlic extract on the bottle, you're not getting the one that's been studied by Dr. Budoff, that's been studied at the University of Florida, that's been studied at medical school at Adelaide University in Australia, and all the other major universities that have done the research. So there's over 750 publications involving aged garlic extract. When you age garlic, the big difference is that it's kind of like when you take cabbage and you change it to sauerkraut. Everybody knows eating cabbage is good for you, but everybody that's in integrative medicine knows that when you take sauerkraut and when it ages, it creates new properties within the food. It's still from cabbage, but it's different now. And that's how it is with garlic. When you age garlic, new chemical compounds are made in the aging process that give it its added benefit. And there's only one company that's got that figured out, and I think they got patents on it internationally. Nobody else is going to do it. And that's the Kyolic aged garlic extract. And when you age it, the other good thing is so when you take regular garlic off the shelf and you take it, you get that garlic odor through your skin, right? A lot of people will notice, oh, man, I can't take garlic. When I take garlic or eat garlic, I smell bad. When you age garlic, the compounds that are responsible for you getting that odor, what I call the Italian odor or the Greek odor, right? So that goes away. So compounds that are responsible for you getting that type of body odor goes away. The other thing is that there's no worry about interference with blood thinners. So they did human studies on people taking aged garlic and on the most common one, Coumadin, that you don't have to worry about it. So they actually did a human trial on it, and they showed that there was no change. Because if you eat regular garlic or you do garlic oil or garlic pills that aren't aged, it will have an effect on your thinning time and react with Coumadin. So I think that, age, you got to get the aged garlic in order to really get the benefits of everything you hear about. Even people that write about garlic, they end up quoting the aged garlic studies, not traditional garlic studies.
So let's switch gears a little bit. And, it's cold and flu season. We spent a lot of time, part one, talking about cardiovascular prevention and the properties of aged garlic extract in terms of that and hypertension. But what about the immune system? You say there's a lot of studies out there. What do some of the studies indicate about aged garlic extract? And also, are there any other plausible supplements that team up nicely with that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think, first of all, the interesting studies that were done at the University of Florida was they took a bunch of college students who were getting ready for finals going into winter semester, right? I mean, what a perfect storm to get sick, right? You're underslept, undernourished, and you're driving your body hard. And so they gave them aged garlic extract, and what the finding was is that it upregulated an immune cell in your intestine called gamma delta cells. And so what it did is
that sounds like a fraternity.
Gamma, I know, delta. It's like, gamma, delta, omega cells.
Right.
Oh, wait, that's taking it with fish oil. But anyway, so the gamma, delta cells in your immune system are responsible for you mounting a response against vectors and bugs. And so it primes them and gets them more prepared and increases them so that you're able to fight off a cold and flu. And lo and behold, when you took aged garlic and you were a college student, you didn't get sick as long as much. And that's a big parameter, right? So they didn't, the frequency went down, and the, kind of how badly they felt went down. Now, I love aged garlic as a baseline. And then I think there's a couple other things. Always think of vitamin D at the first sign of a cold or a flu. And then a couple other botanicals that I think, people should really know more about. One, astragalus, which is actually in combinations with aged garlic and a few of their immune formulas. And then the other one, which I think is probably the best botanical for flu that I actually wrote a book on it, which is andrographis.
Okay.
So andrographis is this fantastic botanical that has human studies on it that shows it gets you over the flu bug quicker than even using, you see all the Tamiflu commercials on TV, right, and using that medication in a head-to-head trial. Andrographis performed superiorly over post-flu symptoms over the drug Tamiflu.
Do you like some of the other things like echinacea, elderberry? Are you impressed with astragalus? Any of those others?
Yeah, as I said, I love astragalus. I really like... elderberry is fantastic. So, when you go out and you get elderberry syrup, all the work done in Israel actually was the original work on a compound called Sambucol. That has fantastic antiviral killing properties, especially flu bug properties. And I'll tell you the other one I like a lot. I mean, obviously the standby, making sure you get adequate vitamin C, but a lot of people end up with upper respiratory problems, and they start to cough and they get congested, and then the lungs start feeling heavy. I love actually ivy syrup, which has been used in Europe for a long time.
Okay.
And a lot, it's in health food stores.
Yeah.
And even a few companies even have it, but I use ivy syrup even in young children.
Yeah.
And it's phenomenal for opening up the lungs.
The botanical is Hedera helix, I think, something like that. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Exactly it.
Yeah, it's not that well known, but it's sort of out there, and I think people don't access it enough.
And there's not good answers on cough syrups, right? I mean, most of the cough syrups got pulled off the market. You can use a little bit of Mucinex to thin your mucus out, but in terms of really affecting your cough and having a little bit of an antifungal, antiviral effect in the sinuses, It really is one of my all-star performers. As soon as I see people, that are prone to the URIs, they're prone to the upper respiratory stuff. So that's kind of, if you're using elderberry, you're using astragalus, you're using aged garlic, you're using andrographis, you get it in the lungs, you're thinking about things like ivy extract. Man, you've got a great arsenal in front of you that I could tell you, you're not going to feel side effects and you're going to get over your bug.
Another one that I like to use when I've had the flu, and it just goes beyond just a regular sniffles or cold, but like a real, more serious viral infection is NAC or N-acetylcysteine, because glutathione glutathione really pushes back against inflammation. And, unfortunately, when you take Tylenol to reduce fever, it kills your glutathione, so it kind of deprives you of your natural defense mechanism. So, I mean, if you're going to say you got a fever, you got body aches, you're taking Tylenol, you're taking many of these over-the-counter things contain acetaminophen, you really ought to take some NAC. At least to protect your liver, if not to help your symptoms. So that's something that I stockpile for those kind of occasions.
Oh, I love that. And you know what? You make a good point. And the other thing is it depletes out of the kidneys, too. So it's one of those things where knocking out that glutathione pool is really tough on you. And what do you usually recommend your patients on your NAC when you do it?
I suggest for a short period of time is go high, even like 1,500 three times a day. Now, normally you'd give a patient maybe 500 a couple of times a day or three times a day for maintenance.
Right.
But, when you're sick, you really burn through your glutathione. And the only thing with NAC, you've got to be a little careful on an empty stomach. It can irritate your stomach a little bit for some people. But generally, if you take it with food, right, it's okay. So those are some great tips for cold and flu season. And now, I know that Kyolic has a lot of different formulas. So there's a cardiovascular formula, concerned about cardiovascular. Is there an immune formula available as well?
Yes, they do have an immune formula, and it works really well. What I always tell people is, when you see the first sign of a bug coming on, just take aged garlic, and you can use the immune formula. You can use the if you want to use just the reserve, but start taking, several capsules a day, six capsules a day, so that you can really start to get a benefit. And with the immune formula from Kyolic, you actually do have, you have some astragalus in it, there's some oregano in it, I think there's some olive leaf extract in it. So it's a nice combination formula. So very good, very solid thing to use.
So how big a factor is stress in hypertension? Because it's got the word tension in it, and we know that, even our language reflects, it made my blood pressure go up, all those kinds of expressions. I notice there's some theanine in the Kyolic blood pressure health formula. So does that...
Yeah, that's right.
Does that play a role in blood pressure control?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, here's the thing is that, what I've seen over the years is that, insulin resistance is a cause of blood pressure going up, right? So as people make more insulin, their vessels get tight, they make more adrenaline. And cortisol is, I think, one of the big, big players. And, we used to just not pay attention to cortisol. 30 years ago, everybody was like, well, if you didn't have Cushing's syndrome or you weren't Addisonian,
then you're fine.
You don't have a problem with your cortisol, right? You're fine. And now we're finding out that even with people with trending high cortisol, so high normal cortisols in the morning, or their cortisol curve is flattened, they don't have an appropriate pattern for high cortisol in the morning, low at night. When you lose those things and you start to make too much cortisol, you're going to make more adrenaline, you're going to make more noradrenaline, and those things cause your vessels to tighten. And the other thing that happens when you stay under sustained fight or flight is you lose your vagal tone. So, your heart beats in a rhythm, and your brain actually is in a rhythm. And so the electrical conduction and the signaling from the heart to the brain can get screwed up when you're chronically in a fight or flight response. And so why are we all wearing Fitbits and measuring things? It's not just to get our 10,000 steps. If our heart rate is too high, so if our resting heart rate's above 76, we've got almost a 1.4 higher risk of having a cardiometabolic event. So you're going to have like a stroke or a cardiometabolic disease. And so higher heart rates mean that your body is stuck in a stressful event. And the other piece would be is if you exercise and it takes a while for your heart rate to come down, or when you exercise, your heart rate goes up inappropriately. It goes too high, too quick. Those are all signs that your body has been under too much stress and that your heart rate is now compensating, right? And it's almost like a circuit board that gets blown, and now your brain doesn't know how to tell your heart when to rest. Mm-hmm. That it's just beat, and the vessels are tight, and that's it. And so stress for me, I've spent an awful lot of time talking about the metabolic impact of stress from a global perspective, and it is core to what's going on with people today. Because as you know, I mean, how many people get 7 hours of restful sleep a night?
Right. And that is a big factor in hypertension. Because I've seen patients who, we couldn't figure out what their cause of their hypertension was. It turned out that they had obstructive sleep apnea. We questioned their spouses usually, and the spouse says, "Oh yeah, they snore," and we do a test. We send them to a sleep lab, and it turns out that they may be lying in bed for 7 or 8 hours, but they're getting only about 3-4 hours of efficient sleep, and that will send blood pressure soaring, right?
Absolutely. I mean, apnea is just destructive, right? From everything from dementia to blood sugar to causing these types of issues with blood pressure. And the other side is, what people don't realize is that sleep, in fact, when you have insomnia, if it's not an obstructive kind of thing like apnea, or a mechanical issue like the jaw and the tongue, dropping and closing the airway and you need to use a bite plate on them, if it's not those things, sleep is considered a disorder of hyperarousal. When people think if they just take a sleeping pill, it makes it better. Oh. What you really have to do is think about, I need to dampen my stress response all day long and then take something to help me sleep. So agents like theanine or Relora or holy basil are all great things to incorporate. If you live a hectic lifestyle, if you're turbocharged, your mind is hyperkinetic as you go into your evening, trying to get that to calm down helps to create a healthy diurnal pattern of stress response, which helps to create a healthy blood vessel.
And I want to throw another element into the equation on hypertension, because so many of the patients that I see have high levels of lead and cadmium. You know, we have this recent tragedy in Flint, Michigan. But Flint, Michigan may be just the tip of the iceberg. It's only the most publicized place where there's too much lead. They're probably, you know, the majority of metropolitan areas in the United States have high levels of lead and cadmium in the water, in the soil, sometimes aging housing stock, and people get exposed to that, and that will absolutely send the blood pressure up.
Without a doubt. You know, what was interesting was the Veterans Normative Aging Study, I think that came out in like 2005, right? And they directly correlated lead content in the bones of veterans and their risk for cardiovascular disease and hypertension. Mm. And this is a Veterans Administration study. And yet we don't really hear about that much. And
nobody pays attention.
It's so important that we understand it. Yeah, this is something that's out there. And you know what? We don't even have good standards to teach people or give clinicians on how to get the lead out, right? You're kind of left on your own to figure out how you're going to help people to get these kind of toxic metals out of individuals who are experiencing symptoms due to those metals, right? And yeah, lead's a biggie.
Absolutely. So since you're the author of the book on testing, which is Your Blood Never Lies, and you've got a website at metabolic-code.com, which talks about testing and how you can assess your risk factors for various diseases, can you give us just a brief primer on some of the tests that you might suggest, maybe some of the tests that are a little outside the mainstream for assessing your cardiovascular risk?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, the first one I do is I do a red blood cell magnesium, even though it's not a perfect way to assess your magnesium, because I don't know there is one. Ionized magnesium.
We use ionized.
But a red blood cell or an ionized magnesium, that is how you start to figure out, does the person have enough magnesium in their body? It really does all start with that mineral being adequate in your body if you want cardiovascular health. And, of course, it has, untold benefits for how you're going to, even for testosterone production, energy production in your muscle, feeling calm, all host benefits, no more restless legs, all that stuff. But the big one is when your magnesium pool is low, you have an accelerated risk for both plaqueing and the development of metabolic syndrome. It's been shown repeatedly. So, and not a serum magnesium, because see, you go to your doc and you say, "I want my magnesium test."
It's
they do
fine.
A serum magnesium.
It's fine. It'll be always fine. Yeah. Unless you're on your last legs and you're checking out, you've had a heart attack, or you're in shock or something, it'll be fine.
Right, exactly. Your body will always keep your serum magnesium good. It just melts your bone down to do it. Right. So you lose bone and you go back to plaqueing again. And so then there is, I think, other important things. I always make sure people get a glucose and insulin. I love it when I can get a 1 hour postprandial glucose on them, give them a glucometer. But if they're just going to the doctor to get a measurement, get a glucose and insulin. I love vitamin D, and I actually like a white blood cell differential where I get the percent monocyte count.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. Why?
Well, monocytes turn on your macrophages, which trigger plaqueing.
Okay.
And monocytes go up as you're triggering chronic inflammation in the gut. So it's a good form when I look at monocytes, eosinophils, and basophils percent. And when those MEBs, monocytes, eosinophils, and basophil percent, add up to greater than 7, I know there's the beginning of a chronic low-grade inflammation. If it goes up over 10, then I know it's happening.
That's like an $18 test, that's done routinely. Everybody
exactly.
Gets it. Yeah, right. Well, that's
right.
Great.
But then it makes sense to look for that one?
Yeah, no, I hadn't thought of that, but that's, I sometimes see, a little elevated monocytes, And, you know, I'm not entirely sure what to make of it, but that's such a very interesting insight that that reflects inflammation and a tendency to, those are the precursor cells for the macrophages, which, you know, create damage and inflammation.
Yeah, right. So that's a biggie. And obviously, measuring oxidized LDL to me is incredibly important.
Yes.
You can look at myeloperoxidase if you want, but why not just measure oxidized LDL? You can do that easy enough. And then people should look at an NMR lipoprofile because
it's a particle size.
It's a particle size, exactly. Mm-hmm. And you want to find out how big or how little my LDL are, how good are my HDLs, and so that one for me creates a lot of value, because then I know, just how disturbed the person's metabolism is if they're making really little LDL particles, or I call BB-sized particles. And then important other basic things they can get. I mean, obviously you could get some of these advanced cardiovascular lab panels, but just getting things like a fibrinogen, which tells you how sticky your blood is. Because that's one of the things that aged garlic works on, is keeping your blood from getting too sticky. It stays slippery, so it moves around, which is great. So fibrinogen is important. And I really like apolipoprotein B to an apolipoprotein A ratio. And for people listening, the B is bad, the A is good.
Yep.
The more B you get, the bigger the ratio. And so what I like about using aged garlic in particular, and also in relationship to that new fish oil we talked about, is that it really does target ApoB beautifully and helps to bring it down. You know, another one you could think of would be berberine, right? Berberine does a pretty good job on remodeling lipids and helping to reduce inflammation.
Right.
So that's a good one.
Right.
And then, of course, triglycerides are key. And in fact, some doctors would still argue today in the pre-diabetic and diabetic population, which is half of our population now, that triglycerides could be the single biggest predictor of what's going on with future cardiovascular risk. And so, those are some of the basics. But, hey, don't forget about vitamin D. And Dr. Hoffman, what I figure a lot of times with people is, a lot of times people take vitamin D and they go back and they get it measured and it doesn't go up. And then they think, well, I didn't take enough. So then they take more vitamin D and it doesn't go up. What a lot of people don't realize is that vitamin D is called a retinoic acid receptor, and that you actually need vitamin A in order to make your vitamin D receptor work. And so, but a lot, and nobody's taking vitamin A these days. It's kind of been tabooed wrongly.
Yeah, yeah.
And so nobody takes any vitamin A. And so therefore they don't get the full benefit of taking their vitamin D. And vitamin A is needed for immunity as well. So I think those are some of the key things I go for. Obviously, if you're on a medication, and most of the drugs that are used in cardiometabolic diseases deplete coenzyme Q10, many of them deplete vitamin D. They deplete vitamin D, and some of them deplete magnesium. That's why I think get your magnesium levels checked, get your vitamin D levels checked, and get your CoQ10 level checked. If you are on meds that deplete, CoQ10, you got to check your CoQ10 status.
What's your take on homocysteine? These days patients tell me, when they ask their doctor for a homocysteine test, and the doctors say, homocysteine, we proved that that's not important anymore, so we're not testing for it. Still important or less so now?
I think homocysteine is incredibly important. I just failed to mention it. Homocysteine, incredibly important for kidney. What's interesting is, if it doesn't directly affect the heart. So very correlated to kidney damage, which in the end is going to cause renal hypertension if you keep damaging your kidneys with high homocysteine. So, you damage the kidneys and the heart has to pump harder to get the blood through it. And then it's a sign that you're not methylating well. And when you don't methylate well, you don't detoxify well. And if you're getting exposed to things like lead and cadmium and nickel and mercury and arsenic, just like all of us are, the number one toxin in the U.S. is arsenic, and number two is mercury, and I think number three or four is lead. We're all getting exposed to this stuff. If you're not methylating well, you're not getting rid of it. Homocysteine is like the canary in the coal mine for me. That means there's a lot of things going wrong when homocysteine goes up. And I got to tell you, everybody talks about, C-reactive protein. I have plenty of people that have a low CRP, but yet they have a high homocysteine, their particle number is really, they've got really little LDL cholesterol, and they're oxidizing their cholesterol. So I think we should be saying to our researchers, we should be looking at CRP in a different light and realizing that it's only applicable in certain individuals.
Right. And it's, and unfortunately, you can have, you know, 6 out of 10 risk factors, and you can have very little plaque in the end. That's why I like to do the testing that Dr. Budop did. I like to do EBT heart scans, which are very economical tests, low radiation tests. And that's where the rubber meets the road. And we get some surprises. We see people, oh, you've got a lot of risk factors. Oh, you have almost no plaque or zero plaque. Or conversely, we'll say, you know, you look fine, but we'll check you anyway. And like, uh-oh, wow, you've got a lot of plaque. So there's some ineffable qualities that maybe we haven't yet uncovered that may lead to the final endpoint of plaque deposition and cardiovascular risk and stroke risk. So, yeah, you know, testing.
I couldn't agree with you. Yeah, couldn't agree more with you on that because, you know, we had, my clinic in Ohio had a, you know, very large institute, and we had, you know, CTs, and, you know, my partner was a radiologist that was, you know, really a leader in, you know, in looking at this, you know, whole coronary artery calcification. And you would see somebody you thought was going to be healthy as could be walk in and have like a 700 coronary artery calcification score.
Just
and
had
you're
a guy
just
like
going,
that.
What?
Just had a guy like
and,
that.
And then you've got somebody else that could barely fit in the device, right? Yeah. They're really overweight. Yeah. That, you know, you think, oh, my God, this person's going to be a mess. They're one big plaque, and they're completely clear.
Yeah, cholesterol 365, and then, like, oh, zero plaque. You know, how does that happen?
Right. So, you know, we certainly don't have all the answers yet because we see that stuff, right? So,
indeed.
So, but the big thing is that knowledge is power. You should look at your labs. You should think about getting, getting a, you know, EBT, coronary artery calcification score, I think is just a really smart thing to do, especially once you hit the age of 50. Why not? They're low cost. And they're telling you the real thing that's going on. And the thing is there's things you could do about it. If you find out something that's maybe not so good, there's things you could do to change it.
Indeed. Jim, as usual, always great information, and we could just go on and on, but our time is limited. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? What are some resources that people can go to? I already mentioned your website. Shall we mention them again?
Yeah, that'd be great. It's jimlavelle.com and metaboliccode.com. But if people have more information, they want to get a free sheet on how to count their carbs, because I'm real big on getting people to reduce their insulin resistance, they can go to jimlavelle.com, and absolutely free, nothing behind it. Sign up and get it.
And Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract, they've got a website, and you can look at the different products there, correct? It's kyolic.com.
Yeah, it's just kyolic.com, and they have they got a lot of their research on it. They've got a lot of their groundbreaking information there. You know, I'm a huge fan of Kyolic for a lot of years, and that's why I continue to talk about it, because the science is simply amazing. It really is.
And indeed, you know, good company, because some companies, you know, they just float their products out there and they say, let's keep the profits to ourselves. They plow back a lot of their revenues into research that properly validates the product. And it's legit research. You know, sometimes research, they look six people and, you know, the studies performed in Serbia or something like that, you know, and it's not, but this is like really mainstream research. Good stuff.
Yeah, it is. It really is, and you got to be grateful to companies that are willing to really prove the value of dietary supplements in our market, because obviously it's been a lot of scrutiny lately, you know. So it's great to see we've got these shining examples.
Well, excellent. Thank you so much, Jim Lavalle, for joining us. I never gave you your credentials. You're a registered pharmacist and a certified clinical nutritionist. So you know where from you speak when you talk about cardiovascular medicine. Thanks very much for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.